It's very nice to be back in Seattle after being gone for a week. And part of the time that I was gone was spent in pilgrimage. And so I thought I'd read from some of the notes that I made along the way. We, Larry and Kate and I, are flying home now from our trip to California. This trip has been, among other things, a pilgrimage. From this standpoint, the journey has been a wonderful success. Marge Ranney escorted our activities and acted as our host to Los Angeles, City of the Angels, of which she must certainly be counted as one. Her escort was doubly meaningful as she had hosted and escorted Mother 30 years before to India and other places. From the start, visiting Yoganandaji's Lake Shrine, we experienced the beauty and peace of that oasis of spiritual vibrations amidst the desert of worldly concerns and activity. With a beautifully constructed temple, newly built above the lake, every plant and building are kept immaculate. Truly, the outer shell of the Hive of God stands as a testament to orderliness, and the feeling of peace remains as a testament to the lasting presence of a great saint. The service we attended on Sunday was appropriately focused on finding peace. As the speaker, Swami Mityananda, commented that when out in the ocean in an 18-foot boat with no land in sight, there is no need for any to speak of God. Because of the open grandeur of the sky and vastness of ocean, the vulnerability of man makes for a wordless worship, breathtaking imagery. Next visit to Mount Washington, headquarters of Self-Realization Fellowship. The spiritual vibrations of Master and over 50 years of sincere seekers is terrific. Meditating in the main building, Larry Mahasya emerged in inner vision, only to dissolve into Sri Yukteswar. Master then came to view. Feeling the blessings of those great masters, I felt closer to the one infinite master through and through. Next on our pilgrimage was the mission of San Juan Capistrano. These remnants from the early 1700s must have truly been an oasis to Spanish travelers. Trees and plants imported from Asia and Africa, rustic tools for tanning hides and pressing olives into oil. The setting is charming and peaceful. The highlight is a tiny chapel with a statue of Saint Peregrine, dedicated especially to those who suffer from cancer. This site has been the place of many healings. Certainly those facing death straight on are surely motivated to seek the divine presence. That little chapel is vibrant with the presence to such a degree that I felt transported to realms spiritual. The blue of the Christ magnified before me. O Heavenly Father, east and west joined, and north and south come together in an apex of single-pointed spiritual consciousness that is at once localized and circumferenced never. Does this not prove that Catholic, Protestant, Jew, Buddhist, and Hindu all derive their inspiration from a single source? Surely the world at large will come one day to this unifying vision and create peace among all people of this earth. Motoring down the Southern California coastline, we arrive at Encinitas, home of the hermitage that Master had visions of since a young man. A gift of Rajashri Janakananda, upon Master's return from India, the Encinitas Hermitage sits atop a bluff that overlooks the Pacific Ocean. Pacific, which means peace, is certainly an apt description for this beautiful setting. Terraced pools and waterfalls display flowers and trees that are only to be outdone by an oceanic vista. Again, what peace, what joy to tread that same ground walked upon by the great master from India. A bhajan was given that evening that featured East Indian instruments and chanting. What wonderful service by devotees of God. Next day, on to Prem, grandson of Papa Ramdas. What joy, what sheer bliss to be in his presence. His joyous wife, Sheila, served us a delicious lassi, a yogurt drink flavored with rose water. Not an hour passed that we were not served another course of food. The feeling in their home resonated with the all-powerful vibration of Ram Nam. Drunk on the name of God, the mind is suspended, and only the feeling of God remains. That night, a bhajan of Prem, Sheila, and their son, Deepak, leading over 100 voices and music devoted to God. Special mention should be made of Shivakram, Sharon Janice, and Louise. Shivakram has published Swami Ramdas' books here in America and has started a newsletter to spread interest in Papa's work. Sharon has pursued the spiritual path and has written an autobiographical book that is due to be published this fall. Also, Louise is a very devoted soul who has helped to organize and put out the newsletter with Shivakram. All made harmonious spiritual company during our stay at Prem's. What joy it is to live in service to the one all-powerful spirit that resides within us. There can be no doubt as to the value of being in the presence of true devotees of God. Prem and Sheila radiate the presence of God, service towards all, and humility. When we stand in the presence of such ones, God is magnified within us. Such was my experience with them. God can be said to be ever new joy. Certainly in traveling to these holy places and meeting devotees of the all-powerful Ram, bliss and joy continues to ring in my soul. Marge then escorted us to a Zen monastery on Mount Baldy. Marge sees it as her path to serve God by serving those who come across her path by housing, feeding, and making travel arrangements for them. She did this with us in such perfection that we felt as though the guests were treated as God. She had also done this for Mother so many years ago. Whenever I think of her, I feel her firmly ensconced in my heart. High atop Mount Baldy, above the bustle of busy Los Angeles, is perched a monastery made up of scattered cabins that houses 12 full-time inmates. The pine trees whisper in the breeze a peaceful vibration and a wonderful fragrance of dry air and pines. We sat around the fire pit and felt the vibrations of the many meditative minds that have been there. In Zen, there is the empty mind. That makes room for the infinite mind. The renunciate we met there had clear eyes and a calm manner. Coming from Germany, he showed that true seekers are worldwide. His calm intelligence spoke volumes for their practice. From the high mountains, we drove to the ocean to bathe our feet and to be purified in the ocean. Singing God's name to the ocean, it seemed the ocean sang its song of praise back. Blissful harmony as I breathed the universe and it breathed me. Final moments spent with Marge and her housemate, Jim, who plays a beautiful Indian wood flute and stands as protector of Marge. Also Dawn, my daughter, who found new friends in Marge and Jim. My heart sings in gratitude to my infinite beloved for the blessings he continues to pour out. So much thanksgiving for the joy of visiting the various sacred centers and personalities, for the ideal companionship of fellow pilgrims, Larry and Kate. O infinite divine, make your presence known to one and all. Make this universe dance in harmony with your song through and through. I hear in my soul Prem singing, Hare Om, Hare Om, Hare Om. Through this trip and our everyday lives, we can discover that it is indeed the world that is God. That God has become every person, every place, everything that we encounter. And if we but have the eyes to see, we can see it all as his play. While we were getting onto the plane, a young man with blue jeans that were hanging way below his waist and his pockets were, back pockets were down by his knees, his pants hung down so far, kind of pushed and crowded in front. And he just had the earmarkings of this was God and God's play, that he was costumed in a particular way and just feeling the vibration and the love of God within him. And later on, as I went back to the back of the plane to use the restroom there Again, he pushed in front and stood there waiting. And I just saw there the presence of God so greatly. And he had a haircut where hair was long on the top and shaved all around the sides. And he was just a beautiful expression of that. And as we waited, the door opened. And instead of pushing in front as he had before, he looked at me and he says, "Oh, were you first?" And he let me go in. And so when we recognize the presence of God in all, then all begin to respond to us with that same love. And we find that there is no separation. There is only the one self-same Spirit. I'd like to read from the Bible this evening, St. John chapter 6, beginning with verse 26. Jesus said, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, ye seek me, not because you saw the miracles, but because you did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for the meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you. For him hath God and the Father sealed." There's an interesting article in the Newsweek magazine, March 31st, 1997, on prayer. And it was a poll of people around their prayer. And so it gave some, they did a poll for what people prayed about and if they prayed. So, not too surprisingly, they found that the vast majority of people, almost 90%, said that they do pray. And in this poll, 82% say they ask for health or success for a child or family member when they pray. 75% ask for strength to overcome personal weakness. 87% say that God answers prayers. 51% think God doesn't answer prayers to win sporting events. 36% never pray for financial or career success. So that's kind of interesting. And it's entitled, "Is God Listening?" And on the front page it says, "Does God play favorites?" So you have to wonder, when God answers a prayer, does he play favorites one for another? I'd like to read from Master's Lessons on Overcoming Fear and Failure Through Determination. The phenomenon of fear is actually a mental poison unless it is used as an antidote, a stimulus to spur an individual onto calm caution. Fear develops a malignant magnetism by which it draws itself to the objects of fear, just as a magnet draws a piece of iron. Fear is the cause of an increase of our miseries. It intensifies and magnifies our physical pain and mental agonies 100-fold. Fear is destructive to the heart, nervous system, and brain. It is destructive to mental initiative, courage, judgment, common sense, the sense to avert danger consciousness, and to the willpower. Fear contaminates strong imagination and feeling, and through them may so influence the subconscious mind that the subconscious mind in turn may completely destroy the willing efforts of the conscious mind. Fear throws a veil on intuition and shrouds the almighty power of your confidence and the soul's all-conquering power. Failure and successes remain deeply rooted in the three minds of one life, unless worked out by fruition or wisdom. They keep accumulating and at death travel beyond the grave and are born into one's next life as seed tendencies. These seed tendencies from the past, though generally hidden in the beginning of the next life, manifest themselves when favorable germinating conditions arise. All the successes and failures and troubles of many, many lives are packed as seed tendencies in the brain, which holds your present consciousness, subconsciousness, and superconsciousness. Hundreds of ghosts of stubborn conscious, subconscious, and superconscious minds are silently standing behind the spectral gloom of your present three minds, encouraging you with bursts of inspiration or discouraging you with explosions of gloom. This is the reason why so many people, in spite of their conscious efforts, do not succeed as well as they want. Though scientists call these unchangeable, congenital, prenatal, hereditary tendencies, this explanation is very limiting and very unsatisfactory. When something is threatening to injure you, do not throttle your all-producing inner machine of consciousness with mental fear. Rather, use the fear as a stimulus to manipulate your inner machine of consciousness to produce some mental device which will instantaneously remove the cause of fear. These mental devices to escape fear are so numerous that they have to be specially manufactured, in the almighty machine of consciousness according to specific and extraordinary needs of an individual. When something is threatening to hurt you, do not sit idly. Do something calmly. Do something quickly. Do something, mustering all the power of your will and judgment. Willpower is the steam or motive power which works the machine of activity. Fear of failure or sickness is cultivated by constantly revolving such fears in the consciousness until they become rooted in the subconscious and finally in the superconsciousness. Then the superconsciously and subconsciously rooted fear begins to germinate and fill the conscious mind with fear plants, which are not so easy to destroy as the original thoughts would have been. And these bear fruits and their poisonous death-dealing results. If you are unable to dislodge the haunting fear of ill health or of failure, keep on diverting your attention to reading interesting books which absorb your attention, or even indulge in harmless amusements. Then the mind will forget to haunt itself with fear. Next, start your mind taking up the shovels of different mental devices and dig out the causes and roots of failure and ill health from the soil of your daily life. Uproot fear from within by forceful concentration upon courage and by shifting your consciousness to absolute peace within. When you are able psychologically to uproot the negative quality of fear, then divert your attention to getting busy on methods of acquiring positive prosperity and health. Associate with wealthy and prosperous people who do not fear sickness or failure. There is a deep-seated karmic reason for chronic ill health and repeated failures, as I've already explained. Idlers do not succeed either, and the indulgent suffer or gradually transform their bodies into hibernating pits of suppressed disease germs. So do not associate with these types. To an unseeing materialist, a disease might appear to be inherited just as a result of a physical law of cause and effect, or hereditary contagion. A medical doctor is heard to say that the father or grandfather has tuberculosis, and that is the reason that the son has it. But a spiritual doctor who tries to trace the deeper causes of chronic disease and unjust suffering finds that certain so-called hereditary diseases are not transmitted from one to another due to physical, mechanical reasons. On the other hand, a disembodied soul carrying a tubercular tendency is attracted to a family where there is tubercular infection. Of course, tuberculosis can also be produced in a healthy body when there is no karmic tendency, by disregarding all physical and hygienic laws. Thus, no person, however healthy, good, or prosperous, can be sure of his behavior or future experiences unless he has destroyed all seeds of the past and driven away the insidious ghostly germ seeds and germ tendencies of past lives, scourging the brain cells of all the germs of failure and sickness and different undesirable tendencies is by no means easy. Like some physical diseases or disease roots which eat into the system, the evil effects of past actions remain or spread, not only through the conscious, subconscious, and superconsciousness of one life, but also through the conscious minds, subconscious minds, and superconscious minds of many lives. Do not fear to die, for death is a deliverer, and you will not die twice in this incarnation. When death comes, then the cause of fear will be removed. When suffering is intense, death delivers us from all pain and mental suffering. Death is the inner physical, mental, and spiritual anesthetic which relieves one from all pains for a period immediately following mortality. Kill fear by knowing that you are protected behind the battlements of God's eternal presence. And you are protected no matter whether death dances at your door or you are rocked in the sea of suffering. His protecting rays can burn the menacing clouds of doomsday, calm the waves of trial, and keep you safe whether you are in a castle or on the open battlefield of life, where bullets of trials are incessantly flying. But remember, without God's protection, your life, health, and prosperity are not safe, even though you are in a scientific, hygienic castle of opulence and surrounded by impregnable trenches, fortified by the fire-emitting guns of man. No matter how impossible to accomplish a thing may appear, the man of volition never stops repeating conscious acts of determination as long as he lives. The evolution of this great force must be carefully studied. When fear comes, tense and relax, exhale several times. Switch on the electricity of calmness and nonchalance. Let your whole mental machinery wake up and actively hum with the vibration of will. Then harness the power of will to the cogwheels of fearlessness, caution, and continuous good judgment, which in turn must continuously revolve and produce mental devices for escaping your specific impending calamity. In this lesson, Master encourages us to use the fear in order to overcome the fear. Now, this may seem to be a strange notion when we first encounter it, but this is the potential that we have within all our so-called negative feelings. We can find within ourselves resources that are untapped, that we have no idea that exists right within us. Our thoughts of limitations keep us bound in a certain pattern, a behavior that tends to reinforce itself. And in this way, we become encased in a very narrow world. Now, if our habit patterns are for good and for positive, then we will be the recipients and the beneficiaries of this. But if our habit patterns are for ill, if they are disharmonious, then they will create within us the seeds of our own destruction. So it behooves us to begin to take a look at our own thought patterns and to realize what are our helpers and what are our destroyers. God has given each and every one of us free will. With that free will, we are truly free to choose as we will. We can choose those things that are good for us, or we can choose those things that are destructive for us. And God does not interfere. He allows us to create. But he also allows the consequences of our choices to be played out. And in this way, through exercise of our own free will, we learn what are those laws that truly help us to evolve into greater spiritual beings, and what are those thoughts and tendencies that tend to drag us down. Now, when we look at our own lives, we can most easily see the thoughts of limitation and destruction as they arise in our mind if we look honestly. The tendency for many people is to look outside of themselves and project their own fears or bad tendencies onto others. In them, they see clear manifestations of what it is that we detest. But very often, the very things that we are most quickly grasping at in seeing another resides right within our own consciousness. Now, many times, the quality of our thought gets focused in a particular arena. When we meet a person, for instance, perhaps our mind immediately goes to the negative attributes of that person. But we can equally see the positive attributes. Now, this does not mean to put on blinders and to ignore who that individual is and their fullness of what it is that they are made up of, both human and divine. But there are so many who are quite willing to look for fault and see the littleness within individuals that it doesn't allow room for the fullness, for the potential, for the expansive quality to come in. Our mind can, in general, be said to be focused on two different aspects. One is contractive. It pulls our world into a small, confined space. Now, as a child, I used to love to get into my closet and build a little fort in there and have it all contained. And this is my own private world. And there's something very comforting about this. And so when you feel afraid or when you feel intimidated, sometimes you build a very tiny world in order to reach your own comfort level. So you can be, even though perhaps a small fish, you can feel like you're a big fish in a very small pond. It's far more difficult to go out into the ocean of experience, of entering into the greater world, where you lose some of your landmarks, where you lose some of your boundaries, and you see the vastness of God consciousness pervading the entire universe. And through this experience, your consciousness can open up and begin to see tremendous vistas of what is possible in God's mind. But why don't we do this? The reasons are many. But most often it is because we are afraid. In the Adam and Eve parable, the first consequence of Adam, which is reason, and Eve, which is feeling, eating of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, or entering into a duality, was to be afraid and to have shame. And so we see that it is universal throughout the world that people are limited in their thoughts and in their behavior through fear and through shame. So fear is the originator, so to speak, of this contractive quality. It makes us reduce our world to the merest formations, the smallest formations that we can formulate in our own mind. We see this in people who become very dogmatic in their beliefs, whether that's about religion or a particular philosophy or a particular way or style of living. And they become so devoted to having that one vision, and anybody who, you know, varies the least bit out of those lines, out of that vision, are said to be wrong or they have very strong emotional reactions to them. And this is because fear dominates their life. They cannot allow their mind to become more elastic and to stretch into a wider vision of God. Because they live in fear, they live in a very small world indeed. And it is said that a coward dies 1,000 deaths, and a hero dies but once. When we are afraid of death, which is the ultimate leveler of us all, then we live in constant mortal fear of being destroyed. But this is because we have garnered a false attachment to being this body. Now, most of us wake up in the morning, and when we do, we are identified with this body. Oh, this body feels tired, or this body feels ready for action, or this body wants to stretch, or it wants to do this, or it wants to do that. And so it immediately begins to identify with that narrowest vision. But if instead we were to wake up and to think about God and the vastness of God and allow our consciousness to expand with that and to re-identify ourselves with the larger vision of who and what we can be, then we loosen that identification. If through meditation we feel ourselves to be alive with energy that is not strictly related to this body, but goes beyond this body. It is in this body, and yet it is not perfectly identical with it. It goes beyond it. And so we begin to step into a larger world. And then through deeper meditation, if we can identify not even just with the energetic body, but with the vastness of spiritual consciousness, and our consciousness expands and goes beyond even the energetic body and feels itself identified with the great ideas and the great unfoldment of creation, of the spiritual mind, then we have entered into the causal realm, and that is one step more beyond narrow identification with this body. Now, the brain is the instrument for divine mind. In order to operate in this world, we need to have a properly functioning brain, a properly functioning body. And so this is very important to be able to function in this world fully and completely. And we should do nothing that harms this body. But it is not confined to the biochemical reactions of the brain itself, because this is merely the repository of divine mind. Because when we enter into deepest state of consciousness, deepest state of meditation, we learn that we are not this body. We are not even narrowly defined with the energetic body. We are not even narrowly defined with the idea body. But we feel ourselves in complete oneness and harmony with the whole. And this is true emancipation. This is true freedom and true health that we can all aspire to. Now, there are many who are involved in paths that don't hold out this greatest and this highest ideal. Rather, there are things that are in the in-between worlds that are worshipped, that are sought after, that are focused upon. But we who are on this final mile hold out before our own mind's eye this highest vision, not because it is easy, not because we can do it in one fell swoop, but because it is the greatest and the highest, the grandest vision we can hold out for ourselves. And through this, God has the capacity to fulfill our wish. Now, in hearing about prayer, and does God favor some over others? That's a very interesting idea. If somebody is praying for some particular kind of remission from a disease, perhaps, and one person goes on to have a disease, even though they pray inwardly to have it removed, and another person has some kind of remission, a healing. And why would God answer one prayer and not another? Our own individual makeup determines the cause for whether prayers are answered in specific ways or not. One is our deep determination, our deep devotion, our deep faith in God. Now, this doesn't mean just a passing faith. Faith exists on three different levels. One level is in a conscious sense, in the conscious mind, and it's the amount of faith that exists there. And sometimes there is a weak-kneed faith. It's not very strong, really. Perhaps it's just coming about because we're in a pickle. We're in a bad predicament that we can't get ourselves out of. And so we give a half a glance towards God and say, you know, save me from this. But it doesn't represent a true and deep and lasting faith in the infinite possibility. The next level is the subconscious mind. And there is faith in a subconscious way. If we have lived a spiritual life, if we have programmed ourselves properly in the subconscious mind, then it becomes more responsive when we go deeply within ourselves and ask for something deep in prayer. But most often, we are made up of mixed qualities on the subconscious mind. As Master mentioned in the reading tonight, that it's not even just the of this lifetime that the subconscious mind is a repository of habits and thoughts and feelings for, but it is of many lifetimes. Now, this could seem to be an overwhelming task to purify the subconscious mind that is such a deep well of programmed information. But the wonder of it and the glory of it is when the subconscious mind recognizes a pattern that works better for itself, then it will naturally gravitate towards that. And it tends to be in clusters. So if you attack and go after one thing, it tends to have ramifications that spread out through all the other things. And that is why in the spiritual path, there are no small tasks. There are no things that we can do non-mindfully that doesn't have its repercussions and its results. So we should seek to do everything that we do in this life with that idea and that ideal of perfection. Whatever it is that we do, whatever responsibilities we take on, we should do our best to bring the greatest amount of light, the greatest amount of love, the greatest amount of perfection into that one thing. Now, this can be tending a garden, this can be cleaning our home, this can be creating a multinational corporation. It doesn't make any difference on that level because in the subconscious mind, it takes each one of those actions and goes to work on it, and it has its effect. So we can work on one particular thing and arrive at a state of perfection, and it helps the whole to come into greater perfection. So we shouldn't look at anything beneath ourselves. We shouldn't look at anything as being small or petty, because it all has the potential for divine consciousness. Next comes the superconscious mind. Now, when we can access the superconscious mind and it responds to us, things can happen, and they can happen in a hurry. In the superconscious mind is reposited all the divine thoughts and ideals that originally inspired this going out into creation. But it also holds within it the perfection of spiritual consciousness. It is in the divine mind that we can get inspiration, that we can get thoughts that automatically come into our own consciousness, that we can arrive at solutions that are beyond our own knowledge and understanding even. And so it is through this divine superconsciousness that we can enter into our divine realms. And once accessing that, then we can do as Jesus did and say, if you ask this mountain to be removed, it will be removed. Now, all three of these levels of consciousness needs to be brought into alignment in order for divine consciousness to be fully manifest in any particular individual, in the conscious mind, in the subconscious mind, and the superconscious mind. Now, fear is one of the great inhibitors in growth, and it can stop us from doing things. It can stop us from even starting things. And it can certainly stop us in completing things. And this, I think, is one area where becoming as a child and childlike, children know no fear in that sense. They will strike out and they will do something, and sometimes not with good common sense, and sometimes not with any forethought. And this isn't exactly the state we want to be in. But they have that ability to seize upon an idea, a thought, and they will just simply go after it. Now, I grew up in a family where perfectionism was held out as an ideal, but it was held out in a somewhat negative way. And if you didn't do things just in a certain way the first time, then there was punishment for that. Now, this does not help us as children growing up. And it does not help us to take the right attitude towards life, because then we become afraid of trying things and doing things and completing things. This perfectionistic type of thinking can anticipate doing something and then not having it measure up to what we would hope that we would be, or we would hope that the project would turn out to be. So sometimes we don't even start things because of that. Or we just get started into it and we realize that it's not going to measure up to that level of perfection that this perfectionistic mind thinks of. And so we drop it off and we leave it and we let it go. Now, so oftentimes, people who don't have the education, people who don't have the family background, are those ones who go out and accomplish things. Why is this? Because they don't have that perfectionistic part operating in the same way. They don't have this model of ideal to measure up to at every moment. And so they can allow themselves to fail, so to speak. Now, IBM, a large corporation, realized that their research and development company portion was not really being very innovative. And so they did an analysis of it, and they found out that nobody wanted to fail, that nobody wanted to look bad, because then out the door you go. So they took on a new attitude, and they began to say, we pay you in order to fail, realizing that the greatest scientists, the greatest scientific developments, had most often originated because somebody had failed. But they pay attention to their failure. They learn from their experience. And they saw what the results were. And as a result of that, they made great leaps forward in the scientific community. Now, if we took the same attitude with our own lives, that it's not so much around our failures, but it's around learning from our failures, that we can begin to produce results that will look better for us. So it's not a matter of not acting. In fact, this is one of the greatest inhibitants of fear, is to force us not to act. So action is the thing that breaks us free from everything else. Sometimes we don't know what the results are going to be of our actions, but that's all right. We strike out, we try something new, and we develop that, and from that we learn. And unless we can take this attitude that we can learn from our lives, we can learn from our experience, and we become more fearless in it, that we are not so concerned with what other people think, what if we do make a mistake? All the great inventors, all the great scientists have made many mistakes. And yet they continue on. We look at some of the great world leaders, and many of them had been failures earlier in their lives. And yet they did not allow that to stop them from going forward. Harry Truman was a business failure in a store that he had started. Abraham Lincoln was not a very successful lawyer, and yet he went on to great preeminence. Winston Churchill was looked on for many years as an abject failure politically, and he was often laughed at and scorned. But he never let it deter him from knowing what he knew to be true. And so this is the way that we must be if we want to be successes in our life. We must be willing to step out in faith. We must be willing to trust in our own divine origins. Now, this does not mean to treat our lives foolishly. We can still use our own God-given common sense. We can still continue on making plans and doing as we feel inwardly inspired. But when God inspires us to take us to a new level, then we have to leave behind the old ways of thinking. Now, this is what much of the crucifixion represents. Things that we depended on to make us know who we are. And when this happens, it's not a pleasant thing. Because we commonly identify ourselves with our family, with our job, with our position, with various landmarks in our life, when these things are either outwardly or inwardly stripped away from us, it puts us into a state of crisis. Because we are not who we once were, nor are we who we are yet to become. And so at this moment, we need faith greater than ever. Because if we try to just recreate something from the old, it will not fit. It will not be right for us. And if we just try to create for the sake of creation, just to fill the space and the void, that will not work either, because it will be like a house of cards that will come down. And so we need to be willing to stay in that place of void. Before the creation, there was the void. And so before the creation within ourselves, we experienced the void, the nothingness. But within that nothingness, there is the primal creativity of our Creator. And from that void will come out something new, something greater, something more profound, if we would but let it. Because we can stop it. Remember, we have free will. And we can either aid in this sense of evolution, or we can take away from it. But it is up to us and each one of us. And so, in our reading from the Bible tonight, Jesus said, "Seek me not because you saw miracles, but because you did eat of loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for the meat which endureth unto everlasting life." The meat of everlasting life is the spiritual consciousness. And it is where your life springs from. It is where your creativity comes from. It is where the very life that instills this body with the ability to move and think and breathe and have its being stems from. So it behooves us to really begin to dwell near that spring, as Emerson encouraged us to do, from which our life dwells. You know, when you get onto the spiritual path and you begin to make some progress in it, you begin to feel the great joy and the great love. And you begin to see that all of life is divine manifestation. There is nothing greater that we can experience than to have that joy and that ever new joy ever bubbling up in the springs of our own being. But if fear keeps us from moving forward, then we need to sharpen our sword of discrimination and see what our friend is and what our foe is, and we will find that our foe is that shame, is that fear. And so we begin to cut it away, and we begin to exist in love, which is the primal expansive consciousness. It interconnects us with all of life, and we feel our unity and our union with all of life in this way. So let us look to root out and rid ourselves of fear at every moment. If fear becomes overwhelming, then deeply pray to the infinite goodness of God to help remove that fear in us and give us faith and love and courage. Look fear in the face. And so oftentimes, what if somebody discovers who you are? You will still be there. And what if somebody destroys your body? You will still live, because you are forever one with the infinite consciousness. So let go of the fetters of fear, those bands that tighten so tightly around us that hardly allow us the ability to breathe. And releasing ourselves from those fetters, breathing in the spiritual purity of the airs of heaven, and feeling our oneness, and there we can dance in joy and love and prosperity, and to trust, as little children trust, that all will be given for our highest good. Will you please pray after me? O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence,
of Thy glorious presence
in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
And surrender myself to Thee.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with Thee.
Of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Peace.
Bliss.